Over the years, we followed the athletic career of Laura Fahey, and indeed, it wasn't that long ago we were chatting with Laura in Paris when yet more medals were won. Now, she's made a big announcement about her career, and to talk more about that, she joins us now.
Thank you for welcoming me on again.
I suppose the big news is that you're retiring shortly, or you're retiring now from competitive cycling. And what was the decision? Why was that happening?
It's a tricky one, really. It's not a choice I've made myself necessarily, but since it was made at the end of March that there'd be no longer a place for me on the British cycling program, it's been a really eye-opening kind of 3 months for me, and it's made me realize, although I hadn't quite realized it myself, my time on the program was done, and it is time for me to move on and to get a fresh new challenge. And I finished Paris knowing if I was to continue to LA, something would have to change, because I've really not been very happy within the British cycling system for several years now. And I had several discussions with the staff about it and how we could change things to make it work, to improve my mental health. And yeah, one thing after another, and it was just decided that it was time for me to part ways, and off I've gone.
It sounds as if it's been a difficult and an emotional decision as well, because it's been a massive part of your life. You know, you became a mum as well, so you haven't had to look for things to keep you busy for quite some time now.
I've probably approached retirement in every other way I've done, and just sort of thrown myself into it. Sort of fate intervenes. The week I found out my pro membership was terminating, I saw an advert for a job at British Blind Sport, working as a workforce development officer, so delivering training to leisure facilities to improve access for people with a visual impairment. And I was just sort of applied for it, not really thinking, oh, that might be quite interesting. And first ever job interview I've ever done in my life, and I sailed through it and got the job. And the way it's worked out, I've actually got the job as a role share with my brother. So it's a really exciting project to be working on, you know, and moving away from elite racing, I've had a lot more time to be able to spend with family, which is, I've made no secret, is a real priority of mine. It's really allowed me time to focus on me, give me an opportunity to actually work out what do I want, how much do I value my time, where do I want to spend it. And I'll be honest, I want kind of majority to be around Fraser and people who make me happy and value my input. So that's what I'm doing.
For so long now, people have looked at you and the career you've had, you know, the medals, the records and so on. You know, it's been quite an exciting time for you. But I suppose you're still staying in that sports side of things. But what you're doing now could open up sport to others, perhaps, you know, not at that elite level, but in the end of the day, helping people who perhaps are blind or partially sighted just have better access to sport and the benefits that can bring them.
And that's something I'm really quite passionate about. There's a worrying stat that people with a visual impairment have the lowest activity rate in Britain. We need to do something about that. You know, I've witnessed firsthand the effect of leisure and exercise has on mental health, not just from a health benefit of getting active, but the social benefit as well. There's so many benefits to it. So we need to look at how we can unlock these barriers and get more people involved. You touch on it a little bit. London 2012 was fantastic, the raising the profile of disability sport. But in many ways, it's kind of created a real gap between elite and, you know, sport for play. And so there's this narrative now, if people say, oh, I play football, oh, so you're going to the Paralympics. And actually, not everyone wants to go to a Paralympics. Some people just want to play football for the love of playing football. And you wouldn't ask a able-bodied person if, you know, if they were going down to play a five-a-side at a football pitch on a Friday night with a few mates, oh, so you're going to the Olympics. So why should it be different for disabled?
Also, I suppose if we're looking at perhaps blind or partially sighted people, Laura, to get into sport, it's not as if it has to be an expensive thing for clubs or sports centres or whatever to actually make adaptations to. A lot of it is just really perhaps attitudinal, you know, and looking at different ways of training people.
Definitely. And this is something, and unfortunately, that is not just in the leisure facilities. I think it's across UK sport and the governing bodies around UK sport, their awareness of the day-to-day barriers that visually impaired people face, like just how to deliver sighted guidance training effectively, how to deliver information in an accessible format, how to lay out an area so that the visually impaired person can move around safely and not need someone by their side all the time, to understand if they've got a guide dog or a white cane, what adaptations they'll need to make, and putting markings down, visible markings down on the floor so that you can see the court or steps or around a swimming pool, marking out the side so that the visually impaired person can see where the edge of the pool is and feel safe. There's so much to it. It's not just about, oh, we need to get a ball that's got a bell in it, or we need to get talking GPS equipment so that you can read your heart rate monitor. It is the basics, and I think at times we've lost sight of those basics.
I mean, you've had a great career in para sport. What would you say for you would be the highlight? I mean, you've scooped so many medals and broken records. Is there something that stands out for you in there?
I can't get away from the fact, I think the highlight has to be Tokyo, where both Neil, my husband, and I won gold medals within 17 minutes of each other and broke world records on the way to winning those medals. That is a day that you only really think you'll ever dream, and for it to actually happen was incredible.
We do talk a lot of British blind sports, so no doubt our paths will cross as we go forward. But just finally, you know, if there are many blind and partially sighted people out there who still are nervous about getting into sport, you know, just for fun, just for the keep fit part of it, or for making friends, the mental health side of things as well, how would you encourage people to just have a go?
If you don't believe you can do it, you'll never go for it. So you might not be able to see yourself doing it now, but you've got to start somewhere. And it does take a lot of courage. It takes a lot of guts to step out of your comfort zone. So take those baby steps. Like, if you just initially you want to start getting a bit more active, try and walk a bit more. And if you're uncomfortable with walking, you've just lost your sight and you feel quite vulnerable walking outside, reach out to people. You're not a burden if you've got to hold someone's arm while you're walking. British Blind Sport has a resource on their website that can connect you to people in your local area who'd be willing to help and get you out. So take those baby steps, and you might not see yourself racing a bike around the world like myself, but could you see yourself just getting out for a walk and enjoying that fresh air again? And that's where it starts.
Those baby steps, who knows where that could lead to. Laura, best of luck with the future going forward. Again, you know, no doubt we'll be talking in the near future. And thanks for taking the time to speak with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.